Welcome to this episode of the Fabric Podcast, where Greg Meyer and poet Michael Kleber Diggs wonder at why words matter. As we prepare to dig into a particularly fraught and potent word, God, over the next few weeks, this feels like an important place to start.
I'm Greg Meyer, and glad to have you with us, whether you are here live or on the live stream right now or listening to the podcast sometime along the way here. We're just glad you're part of this. Guest today with us is not new to us, but still newish, Michael Kleber Diggs, who is really well known for two things, his poetry and his choice of clothing.
Right.
Yeah. For those of you just listening, he's got a fabric t-shirt on, so yeah. Well, we all have fabric clothes on, don't we? Anybody not wearing fabric? Okay, anyway, so good. And so Michael Kleber Diggs has published this book, Worldly Things, and yeah, amazing piece that we're glad to have, and we would love to make it available to you again. We don't have any for sale here. Didn't have any extras, but you can go to Amazon or whatever and find it, or go to your local bookstore. We go to the Irreverent Bookworm is just around this corner from us, so it's good to support those local bookstores. He also just received another award for this book, the Hefner Heights Kansas Book Award, just recently, this last week, weeks or something like that. So congratulations to that. And Michael is properly humble about all that, but you know, it isn't a matter of getting awards. It's a matter that people there's important stuff going on in this book, and that helps us all understand a lot of things. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about today, and I am just thrilled that it's getting that kind of attention and so on. So, So one of the things that we want to do, why I invited Michael to join us today is next week. We are going to start something called AKA God, also known as God. And I'm convinced, I mean, it's been part of our project since we started in 2006, is that we need to just rethink how we talk about everything from religion to church to faith to sin, but the biggie is God. And that word, God, that some of us are totally fine with and other people are pretty uncomfortable with, is both a great holder of something wonderful for us and also maybe keeps stuff out that shouldn't. And so I thought before we jump into that next week, and I think that's going to be a really rich conversation for us that we'll be doing for 3 weeks right up to Easter, just stepping back and saying, why do words matter? And so that's why I was...
A poet being a pretty good person to ask.
Yeah, a well-dressed poet on top of it.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Do you have anything to say about any of this, or are we done?
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me back. Two nights ago, I watched this movie again that I love very much called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Mm. And there's this scene where a group of young men are arguing with each other, and one of the lead characters walks up to him and says, like, keep going. I like what you're building. And it's kind of a comedic line in a way, because they're just really arguing and having a hard time, but that's building, right? And, you know, not to get to next week, this week, but when I think about God, I think about community, and when I think about community, I think about things that we build together. So for me, it means a lot to be here and to be in conversation with you. And to talk about things I'm thinking about and have access to your music and community and ideas. And I just feel very fortunate.
Good. Yeah. No, thank you. So you think about words and how we use them and how they all fit together. You have something you want to kick us off with?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole job of the poet, is to think about words and how they fit together. And sometimes that's technical. Sometimes that's about how words sound, and sometimes it's about the metrical patterns that are formed when words come together. But of course, it's mostly a method of conveyance. I have a particular thing that I want to communicate, and it might be an image, but quite often it's an idea. And the work of the writer is to kind of explore how how to communicate that. I was going to say how best to do it, but I don't actually think that's the task necessarily. I think it's more just how can I embrace all the different possibilities that allow me to communicate a particular thing. So within that, obviously words are not just the building blocks, but they're the whole house. Mm-hmm. And what they allow us to do, and thinking about what they allow us to do, brings us also into the realm of what can be challenging about that effort to convey, to communicate, to reach out, to be heard, to listen, to receive, and all of those different things. So it's something that I think about all the time, sometimes directly and sometimes in the process of considering it in a different way, but it's always there. It's always the work.
Do you have an example you want to share with us?
Sure. So this is all pre-planned a little bit, by the way. I'm not like just like, oh. So I have a poem that I'm going to read called I Love My Neighbor as I Love Myself. And I want to stop and say yesterday, I think, on TikTok, which is an emerging, we'll call it fascination, that I'm in total control of, that I can stop it at any time, and that I choose to just watch. But I saw a short bit with the comedian Craig Ferguson, and he was talking about when we communicate ideas, he says, we have to answer three questions. The first is, does this need to be said? The second is, does this need to be said by me? And the third is, does this need to be said by me now? And I just thought, how interesting that we've been, you know, sharing ideas leading to this conversation, and then I encounter this person who's saying, these are the ways that we communicate. By the way, he joked, it took him three marriages to figure that out. and then he said, when we're online, there's this distance, which allows us maybe to do and to communicate things in a way that maybe we wouldn't otherwise. And I hold out hope that that maybe sometimes calls us or allows us to communicate things that are wonderful but hard to say. But sometimes I've seen on social media that it allows us or pulls us away from our best self, and maybe we get brisk or unkind in our communications. I don't know if you've seen that on Facebook or Twitter. So anyway, in this poem, I'm just imagining that I am engaging with people directly. I love my neighbors as I love myself. I drive around admonishing strangers. Hurry up, I tell them, or wear a helmet. Kids needing parental guidance get it from me. Teens in black clothes at midnight, sensed but seen like owls, receive my words as care. When I spy an elderly woman with her coat worn loose, I don't hesitate to yell, button up. I want the best for her. I learned of love in harsh commands, curt rebukes, and tired, ravenous hands. The rear view holds ancestral eyes, ravaged, not mine. The hard hand sending the window down isn't mine. It's mine. Love is history plus desire. Love is dominion. It's supposed to attack you. When you send it out, it stings you back like a slap of cold air. Sometimes it arrives in the form of a man driving away, shouting.
Can you read the last four lines for me again?
Yeah, sure.
You read it at a wonderful pace, but I was just still catching up.
The hard hand sending the window down isn't mine. It's mine. Love is history plus desire. Love is dominion. It's supposed to attack you. When you send it out, it stings you back like a slap of cold air. Sometimes it arrives in the form of a man driving away, shouting.
Yeah. I might come back to some of those a little bit later, but so this is a wonderful example of you're using words, and I have the privilege of having some conversation. I don't know that I would figure this out without having talked to you about these things, but you're not telling us how to use our words here. You're not telling us what to say to our neighbors or how to love our neighbors. You are trying to figure out what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're not explaining, you're exploring, I think I've heard you say.
Yeah. I mean, on the surface, the conversation in the poem is about how I was raised. And this is a common experience for Black people who are about my age, especially, I think, for Black men. But I don't want to limit it in that way. Our parents were super concerned that if we weren't disciplined or didn't act exactly right, the world would be unkind to us.
Yeah.
And so on the surface, that's kind of what I'm talking about. But also, I'm just like, how do we express love to people? And what if the person who's doing that expressing is having to reconcile, I want to say tainted love, probably the band is giving me that idea, like lean into music, but a love that's affected by the setting in which it's transacted. So parents who are saying, I'm so desperate for your survival, this is how I can imagine it and what that means. And then of course what that means for the person who came up in that particular experience. And the one thing I want to communicate about this poem is, and there are some other poems in the book for which this is true, but I had a really great conversation with my mom about it. And I don't know that I actually thought about it at the time when I was writing it. I was just so into the idea. But my mom, I think, is the primary audience for the poem. And people who parented like my mom parented, and children who were parented in the way that my mom parented. And like, let's talk about it. Let's share ideas on it. And for me, the poem ended up being an entry point for a conversation that I didn't realize I really wanted to have, to say to my mom, hey, like, this is something I think about, and it's okay. Like, but I wonder how you feel about it.
Yeah. So if you have one of those difficult conversations, like with your parents or something, you know, write a book, embed the message,
right,
and then give them a copy of the book.
This is my idea.
That works.
Yep.
But it's really interesting how many people I have heard recently talk about the fact that they are trying to. It's really been about communication and showing, communicating of affection, communicating of things like that, that they're trying to create a different world with their children than they had with their parents. And like you're saying, they don't necessarily fault their parents. I mean, it was a generational thing. It was, people are different. You know, there's learning and growing to go on. But how do I have that? Because I want my parents to have a different kind of relationship with my kids than what they had with me. And it gets hard, but we're going to dive in more on this. But I want to back up again and just think about words and how they function for us. All right, so we have a good foundation for really dealing with this question. And one is, you know, words are, well, Wittgenstein, 19th century philosopher, he said the limits of our vocabulary limit the world that we can live in, the world we live in. And I think it's true, we need words as vessels, and that's going to be a real big part of our also known as God conversation, but we need words as vessels to be able to communicate something. Without it, we're just not going to be able to say the things, or share the things, share the feelings and things that we have with others. At the same time, as soon as we put a word around something, what have we done? We've categorized it. We've limited it. We've isolated it. We think we know it now, right? And maybe we don't quite, you know, so we have to have the words. They can sharpen, they can focus our thoughts. And to not have good words leaves us, what, unstructured, leaves things vague, kind of like, I don't quite know what's going on, I can't really, I don't understand my world. But then we can also assume things because we have words, we can box things in, and maybe sometimes if we don't have a word, we don't have a name for something, maybe it leaves us open and curious. I mean, it's like some of the things you may have heard us talk about in life, it's a mess, right? And we have to live in there with that. So here's what we'd like you to do. You guys, at least many of you, are familiar with Menti, right? So we would like you to, so first of all, this is not an app, and there's no email associated with it. Like, there's no way you are being traced or tracked or whatever on this. But if you have your phone with you, you have permission to pull it out. And the question is, what are other words for fast? Just start putting them in there. You can put in as many as you want, one at a time. Put it in, return, put it in, return. And that's all I'm going to say. What are all the different words you know for fast? And look up there once in a while. If you see a word up there that you say, oh, yeah, that one, type it in again, right? Because the more often it gets put in, the bigger the word gets. We'll see what our most common words for fast are. So as I'm watching these come up here, we've got lots of responses in speed, speedy, quick, rapid, swift, blazing. But then we have some different takes on it. Obviously, some of the negative things, like, they keep zipping all over the place here. Okay, sloppy. But then there's a whole different understanding of fast. Is someone not had anything to eat yet today? There's, I'm seeing abstain and a couple of things. Starved, yeah, thanks. Yeah, you guys can yell it out. Withhold fits in that category, but then we have agile, and rushed, and nimble, and careless, and short, and promiscuous. Fly, cheetah-like, blazing, agile. Brief, zip, fly, zoomy. So, now this is just like fairly innocuous word, right? But every time you want to say something about speed, you pick one of those, right? Why do you pick the one you pick? Because it fits the best, right? At that moment, or I don't know. I guess I'm not trying to abstract anything too enormous from this, but it just shows you all the options that fast has and, you know, and then what the person hears, like what they're taking away from it. So just on a simple word like this, you have that. Should we up the stakes a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, so put in every emotion that you can put a name to. This kind of picks up on what Melissa was talking about 2 weeks ago with better than better communication. But what are all the different emotions that you recognize in yourself? Start putting them in. And again, if you see one up there, they say, oh, yeah, didn't think of that one, but that's a good one for me. Type it in. You don't have to be novel. Just keep putting them in. As you're doing this, and you can already see a pretty big cloud showing up, there was a study, I think you guys are familiar with Brené Brown. I can't remember if it was her own study or one that, I believe she was a part of it, but they were asking people the emotions that they could identify. Do you know what the average number of emotions a person in the United States could identify?
Three.
Sad, mad, glad. Happy, angry, whatever. So you guys are above average, at least collectively. Each one of you came up with only three and added up. No. What do you see in all that, Michael?
Yeah, I was just thinking about when I was in high school, I probably could have named three. I'm tired, I'm hungry, or I'm, let's say, distracted. We'll use that term. Those were kind of my three emotions. I was having a conversation with a professor at the University of Minnesota earlier this week, and he's writing about and thinking about dark memorials. And before he spoke with me, he spoke to the poet Gwen Westerman about the site in Mankato where 38 Native Americans were hanged on one day. And he and I talked about the George Floyd Memorial, and he asked me if I had visited, and I said yes. And then he asked me, how did you feel the first time you were there? Which I regarded as a super complicated question. The first time I was there was a few weeks after George Floyd was killed. Incidentally, the very first house I owned was at 4956 Chicago Avenue. So 11 blocks south of there and very close to here. And the memorial at that point was just so many things, including this emerging thing. So there was the feeling that I had, the feelings that I had when I was standing right at the spot where George Floyd was killed. And then there were the feelings that I had when I was standing up by the people who were putting up a makeshift clothing site or handing out food or painting a list of demands on the street. So it's many things all at once. It's horrified, sad, devastated, tired, frustrated, disappointed, concerned. All of those emotions, overwhelmed at the sight itself, and proud, inspired, happy, resilient in some ways. Like all of these things kind of all at once. And when we are thinking about emotions, I, by the way, want to just take one step back. I'm a poet and a person. I don't want you to think that I'm like this emotionally connected person all the time. I'm thinking about this all week to come talk to you about it. And I dissociate and avoid and conflict and all of it more than most. If I told my daughter why I was coming here to talk, she'd just be like, uh-huh. But no, to think about, to be asked to think about, to recognize like all the things that I was feeling in that moment did a couple of things for me. The first was to think about it and how I would express that, but also to return to that place and name it, even as I would acknowledge that while I was there, I was not doing that. I didn't take a moment to stop and say, how do I feel right now? In some ways, I didn't have to. The sadness is one of those emotions that you don't have to stop and figure it out. It tugs at your shirt. But that there's a real value in doing that. Perhaps while you're there or wherever, but also later. And there's a tremendous value in being able to name it. The inability to express how you're feeling, I think, affects a person physically, emotionally, spiritually. It affects how they relate to other people and engage with other people. It limits those things. So for me, just my reaction is this is important work. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many ways, you know, so many different directions you could pursue why words matter. And you probably notice, and our big concern here is how they affect us relationally, like how they're a part of our relational lives, so we don't have to have three marriages to figure out those three tips,
right,
like Craig Ferguson did.
Yeah.
But they do. And you know, we were talking about the fact that, so being able to name your emotions, to know that I have all these different kinds of emotions, that's really important. But then to be aware of them is another one. Like, it's not that I just know that I have these emotions, but when I'm caught up in it, can I identify this? Can I name this emotion now? And I think it's equally important then to say what the way I'm experiencing this emotion isn't quite what I think of in terms of anger, or it's not quite what I think of in terms of resentment. It feels different. Can I refine that? Is there another word for it? Is there a better word for it, or a sub-definition sort of thing? And then I know one of the things that you were talking about is like, can I communicate that?
Right.
And am I willing to communicate that emotion to another person?
Can I share it? Can I share it in a way that makes it hearable and non-judgmental? And you can't share it if you don't notice it. Mm-hmm. And that feels like an intentional practice.
Well, you do share it, but it's by acting it out. You make the other person pay for it.
This is a good point. That's a good point. If you're frustrated, you're probably communicating that.
And it's probably not helpful.
Yeah, in a way that's not helpful, especially if it's unnamed. Mm-hmm. And it can be really hard to kind of step back, to take a moment to check in with yourself and how you're feeling, to have the language to describe it, and then to share it, which I think is part of that sharing implies, oh, hey, I just want to tell you I'm feeling frustrated right now. Just noticing that, and I wanted to tell you that type of thing. And what that can allow. I've been married for a while, and every once in a while, my wife will, a couple weeks ago, she brought me a small bowl of kiwi and apples.
Just brought them.
I thought, wow, that's just so beautiful. I especially thought that later. That's like a super loving gesture. And I said, I'm not hungry. And she said, yes, you are. And I think she's probably right. So whether I'm noticing it or not, it's still present there. Uh-huh. Right? I did tell her later. It meant a lot to me that you brought the apples and the kiwi. Not just the gesture itself, and the fruit was delicious, but also that you knew that I maybe could do with a little bit of a little snack.
Yeah. Something nice and beautiful like that.
Yeah.
I would like to do a little experiment. I want you to work with your words a little bit. All right. Thank you for contributing all these. I think this is just, this richness is kind of fun. Well, post these on Facebook or whatever so you can see the word cloud later. But there's a slide with three ways to explain something if you want to pop that. So you've got a Sunday paper. If you don't, we can bring you one. But the backside is just blank. What I'd like you to do is to practice using your words, all right? So got some paper. You got a pen there. I would like you to find three ways to explain something that is... So this needs to be real. So think, where's a place you have tension with someone or... maybe a group of something that's problematic, something that makes you have kind of a hard emotional reaction. You know something needs to be done about this. And I'd like you to don't do paragraphs here, just like a sentence or two. I'd like you to tell this other person, this other group, how you're feeling, and I want you to do it in three different ways, all right? The first way is just calmly, objectively, non-judging, just state the facts. This is the situation, okay? The second way is try to do it lovingly. You're going to say this to the other person with compassion. You're going to say it with understanding of, empathy for where they're coming from and perhaps why they did or why they're involved in this the way they are. And then the third way, bluntly. This is probably the way you want to say it, right? You can be offensive. You can be abrasive. Just lay it on them, okay? So take a minute and do that. How are you doing? You can keep working a little bit. So as I do this, I know which one I probably tend to default to, but to think that, well, I've got, well, there's probably more options than three, but I've got all three of these options of how I might communicate something that's difficult for me, and I get to choose which one I'm going to use, right?
That's right.
So because my words matter, and the way I wrote these three things, I was pretty honest. I am not going to read this out loud. They're not all real nice or real honest,
right?
On the different sides, and knowing like how would I do this is an important thing. It's the which set of words I would use really make a big difference for me.
Which also leads us to why. Like, why would you do this?
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's about intimacy, which is a pretty abstract, multifaceted idea in and of itself. Mm-hmm. In all the different ways that we express intimacy and can, and all the times when we don't. When we miss the opportunity to draw in closer with someone who's important to us. And I always like to define important broadly. It might be someone that we live with, that we've chosen to live with. It might be our next door neighbor. I am someone who goes to the same grocery store all the time and usually to the same checkout person. And the ideas that we share in conversation in that moment are a form of intimacy, too. But why do we do this? Like, why do we take care to express, why do we choose to express something in the first place? And then why do we take care with how we express that idea? What's behind that? What desires kind of motivate that?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the work of intimacy. It's trying to find a way to remove or push aside or navigate obstacles to being close with people who are important to us.
I know you have described a lot of your work having to be with trying to understand intimacy.
Yeah.
Did you have one piece?
Yeah. I'll share a poem. I want to say that I feel like intimacy is the work of my adult life. It's the thing that I feel like I keep over and over trying to learn how to perform, exhibit, maybe someday exemplify. When I was in my 20s, I realized that I kind of kept everyone at a little bit of a distance, which I think was informed by the loss of my father when I was young, and this just real realization that our time here is so short and uncertain, and I'm just not going to allow myself to be devastated like that again, which just doesn't work. It's not a model for living. And so then it became, how do I push past that to exist in authentic relationship with people? And now a lot of it is, how do I say the thing that I'm desperately trying to say? We often think of that as a difficult thing to say because what we want to communicate is negative. And the poem that I want to share now, which is like a last minute shift, it's kind of the thing that I do from time to time, is the other one. It's, I was trying to find a way to tell someone that they were just like really important to me, that I love them. And in this case, the person is a poet named Sean Hill, who's from Milledgeville, Georgia, and lived for quite a long time in Bemidji, Minnesota, and hosts a writing conference every summer in Bemidji called the Northwoods Writing Conference, which is a national treasure in the writing world. And at the time I wrote the poem, Sean lived in Alaska, and now he lives in Montana. But Sean was a mentor of mine in a program that I participated in. And we spent one weekend together, 3 days. He's a birder. He is a poet. His poetic practice is deeply connected to research. So if he's interested in something, he'll do research on it. And he was a new dad. He also likes bourbon, and so does someone else sitting at the table here right now. So we had a lot of things that we bonded around. And that weekend was really, really important to me, including at the end of that weekend when he said, hey, Michael, you have something here. And how much that meant to me and how encouraged I was by that. While he was here, he had us do a series of poetry exercises where we wrote poems on postcards. So you're dealing with a limit of space and how much can you communicate in a small amount of physical space. And this poem is postcard to Sean, or fraternity, or chance. For example, I might write, I thought of you the other day on a trail through woods due south of the Minnesota River, just west of the Capitol. So quiet there. I heard critters scurry along the path, and leaves and twigs rustle and snap, my own feet falling while I puzzled my way through some particular poem part, wanting to know more about prayer, a specific Catholic prayer I used to recite. Sean, a bird tweeted or trilled a morning song quite short, quite grand. It got me wondering what creature calls with notes above the rattle, which led me back to you, who might know, or research until you did. You, out west in Fairbanks, north of me yet, still sleeping, or up with your baby boy, as once I was up with my baby girl. Or I might write to fatherhood instead, or happenstance. Because postcards to people are postcards to ideas, to ideals, to abstractions. They're psalms, quite short. Anyway, I wanted to reach out to you and these other things to say, brother, I looked it up. I'm pretty sure it was an indigo bunting. Sean was in town a couple years ago. I know it was pre-pandemic because we were gathered in person and unmasked at a reading series that's hosted at Plymouth Congregational Church. And I was asked to introduce him. And my book had not come out yet at that point, but the poem was ready, and I got a chance to read it to him, which meant a lot to me, because that was what I was trying to do the whole time, is to say, you matter to me. Our time together mattered to me. I love you. And there's so many things that we navigate when we try to do that. And among men, like, one of the things that we navigate is perhaps upbringing and cultural traditions and other things that encourage us not to be conspicuous in our affection for other men. And how hard it can be to just say, you mean a lot to me. Thank you. I love you. I care about you. I'm grateful for you. I remember what we shared when we were hanging out together. And so it was, I don't know, it's a form of intimacy. It's a form of words and why they matter and what they allow us to do. And, yeah.
You know, so the conversation now, there's all kinds of things we'd love to do. In fact, canvas you on how you understand intimacy, but I think we are where I want us to be right now for getting ready for what we're going to be doing this next few weeks, this project. And I think intimacy maybe is the word. I think it is maybe something we all experience, we all know, we all long for, we all want to offer, and we don't have a very good semantic range of what it is and how we experience it. We think maybe there's only certain kinds of it. I think I'll speak being a man. I think we have maybe a very limited range of understanding of how to be intimate with others. And I think intimacy is the shortest pathway towards building trust with other people and how we can communicate it. So if we don't have good language, if we don't have a good semantic range for intimacy, our ability to create trusting relationships, including relationships across conflict, is very, very difficult. And if I think, I'll steal something for what I was going to say at the closing of the whole gathering, and that way I'll let you out faster then, okay? But the Gospel of John starts out trying to introduce us to Jesus, and you may know the verse yourself. In the beginning was the what? The Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God. And, you know, what does that mean? It's, but it was like, what? So Jesus wasn't so much like someone who came and changed the cosmic equation as someone who came and told us what God, whatever this God thing is that we're going to explain, what we needed to know. And I think of that word, if I just maybe to say, only let it have one word, intimacy.
Yeah. Closeness.
Yeah. I want to be with you.
Yeah.
I think the word intimacy matters. And I think it's not just a lifetime exploration for you, Michael. I think it's for all of us. So thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wanderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.